Good morning. I'm Timothy Lamb. I represent the Appellants Fitness Insurance and Randy Schumacher. I'd like to start just to let the court know that some of the key parties here, I know you've read the briefs. Randy Schumacher is an individual. He and his wife own fitness insurance. He was, through fitness insurance, purchased this 2005 Bentley. Fitness insurance is just a car company.
But ultimately, the owner of the car was fitness insurance, not Mr. Schumacher.
Yes, yes, ultimately. Mr. Schumacher, I believe, was named in this case because he was in possession of the vehicle. Because there was no property claim by the plaintiff, by Resource One. Mark Fleeton is a name that you've seen throughout the briefs. He's not a party to this case. He was an individual who was president of a company called North American Capital Imports, which is a licensed automobile dealer in the state of Texas, and was a Texas corporation. North American Capital, again, they were the one, North American owned this particular Bentley. They had the title work for it. Eventually, that title was put in their name.
Excuse me, Mr. Lamb, that raises a question. You said they had title work for it. It wasn't clear to me on the record whether or when the title was put into North American's name. Was it in North American's name at the time the security interest was supposedly created, or was that done afterwards by Mr. Cleveland?
I don't know how familiar you are with the automobile business. I represent a lot of dealers, lenders, so I deal with this a lot. What you'll see, there is an exhibit attached to the stipulated facts that North American received on June 11, 2008, what we call an open title. A company called eCarLink out of California sold it to North American, and they signed the title over to them. Under Texas law and under Colorado law, a dealer can keep that as an open title so that when they eventually sell it, they don't have to process it twice, put in their name, and then to the buyer. So they did have title. They had the title, the original title. It was just signed over and endorsed, but they had not processed it through the state of Texas to get a title in their name. When Mr. Clayton went in and borrowed money, which was in April 1st of 2009 from Resource One, Mr. Clayton signed a note, and then he signed a security agreement where he pledged this Bentley. Only problem is he didn't own this Bentley. He had no interest in this Bentley.
And how do we know that? The title was open.
But it was open to North American.
How do we know that it was open to North America?
On the assignment, it says to North American title.
Which exhibit are you talking about?
It was stipulated facts.
Yeah, I know. Exhibit 5. Mm-hmm.
I believe it's Exhibit 5.
Yeah. So there's 4 pages in that exhibit.
Yeah.
Sorry to distract you.
Oops.
Oh, I see it. Okay. I got it. It's the 4th page of the exhibit.
4th page.
Yeah, okay.
So it's to North American. So that granted North American title at that time.
So Mr. Clayton was never entitled?
Never entitled.
How could he grant a security interest?
He couldn't. But he did. Resource One did not do their homework.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that raises the question of, you said he could not grant a security interest, but he could have granted a security interest in behalf of North America, could he not?
As an officer of North America, he could have done so, but not individually.
Did he sign any of the operative documents in his capacity as president of North America?
No, he did not.
I apologize for that.
Okay, he did not. So let me tell you, though. The application for title that was eventually processed by Mr. Clayton and North American is signed by Mr. Clayton on behalf of North America. The applicant is North American. It says on the application for title, North American is a dealer for resale. Hmm. That's how the lien gets put on the title in favor of Resource One by the title application. But that's all signed by North American. So that being the case, when this was conveyed, on April 1, 2009, and the title application was done on April 2, 2009. Resource One didn't bother to check, never must have looked at the title documents. We don't know. Those aren't facts and issue. But North American had owned this vehicle for almost a year. So Mr. Clayton had no interest in it.
Actually, on the application for title, it says North American is the owner, but it's signed by Mr. Clayton.
Clayton, right.
Not as the officer of North America, just R. Clayton. That's all it says here.
Well, he doesn't put forth his authority, but he actually had no interest in the vehicle to actually convey that. So when the vehicle, Mr. Schumacher went down, or actually saw it in September of 2009, on a website, he sees the vehicle, it's in inventory through with other cars, he sees it, he contacts them, he sends somebody down to inspect the vehicle, they see it on the dealership. Mr. Schumacher goes down there on September 23rd, 2009, he sees it on the dealership with other cars, and he works a deal. And that's the first contract in his name. It was later changed to Fitness on October 1. So Fitness is the purchaser. At all times, this vehicle was advertised for sale by a licensed dealer, and that brings us really to the first issue regarding Section 9302A.
Before you get into that, let me ask you another question then. Is it possible for North American to have given a security interest in its vehicle to secure the personal loan of Mr. Clayton?
Yes, I believe it is possible. We see it all the time where owners of companies take out loans and there's a pledge of collateral. Sometimes real estate, sometimes it's personal property.
So Mr. Clayton, acting as an officer, president of North American, could have pledged the vehicle to Resource One to secure his own personal loan.
I think if the documents would have shown that it came from North American Capital Imports, that I think that would have been legal. But we don't have that here. And this is part of the problem. The trial court confused Clayton and North American. Even Resource One in their answer brief says, well, basically Clayton and Resource One, or North American, are the same, one and the same. Well, they're not one and the same, they're distinct person and a distinct entity. And where that comes into play,
well, I think that comes up when, because of the stipulation too, doesn't it? And the parties entered into a stipulation and said that the car was purchased by your client from Mr. Clayton and North American. Which leads to some confusion about,
yes.
Well, did they really purchase it from Mr. Clayton individually, or did they purchase it from North America?
Well, if you look at the contract that Fitness signed, it's with North America. Mr. Clayton had no interest in the vehicle to be able to sell it. Mr. Clayton was the one who negotiated the deal, but it's North America who had title, North America who agreed to sell the vehicle. And I hate to transfer.
Excuse me, I hate to keep interrupting you, but we have a lot of questions about this case. Does your client, or do you, on behalf of your client, make any claim to the vehicle under the provisions of 9.320B?
This is an interesting thing. We took the position, because 9320B is basically between a person who owns it for personal, family, or household use, and selling it to a person who's going to use it for personal, family, or household use. Mm-hmm. You have a company with a company. They don't have households, they don't have families, they can't be mm-hmm. personal. We've taken the position, which I think is accurate under the law, that that can't apply, because we can't meet that criteria, that one element. The trial court found, however, that Mr. Clayton owned it for personal, family, or household use based on one provision in the security agreement, which said, this is a pledge of personal property. Now, I want to take you back to first year law school. There's two kinds of property, personal and real. But the trial court didn't really get that. So they thought that meant personal, family, and household. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me try to cut it
you know, cut to the proverbial chaser. Even if Clayton did have the car for personal use, the ultimate purchaser was Fitness Insurance.
Correct.
Because it's a corporation, it can't have personal use.
Correct.
So 320B is not something you can win on.
No, unless you agree with the trial court that if North American owned it for personal use, you know, family, household, and personal use, then why can't Fitness? And I reject that premise.
All right, so we're not here to argue 320B.
No, we're talking the application of 320A.
Thank you.
Let me ask a question about 320A, also yes. Trying to cut the... If your client bought it in the ordinary course of business from a person who is in the business of selling inventory, which is what you argue, you seems like you're almost there, except I have one question.
Okay.
The statute says you take free from the security interest created by the buyer's seller.
Correct.
The seller was... North American, you say?
Yes.
The person that created the security interest was Mr. Clayton. It seems like your client would take free of a security interest created by Mr. would only take free of a security interest created by North American and not one created by Clayton under the plain language of the statute. How does he deal with that?
Okay. Well, first of all, the security interest created by Mr. Clayton, he had nothing to convey. If the court looks at basically, it's under the UCC, there's a doctrine of attachment. And the doctrine of attachment says that for a security interest being enforceable against a debtor with respect to collateral, only if there's value given, and there was, and the debtor has rights in the collateral or the power to transfer to the secured party.
The debtor being Mr. Clayton.
But Mr. Clayton had no rights in the collateral.
What were you just reading from? The statute?
Okay, I'm reading from section 9.203.
Thank you.
We cited that in our briefs.
Okay, so you're saying the security interest never attached because Clayton had no interest in the vehicle.
He had no yes. So the only way it could attach is if it was given by North American, who had rights. And North American did that by the title application. They filled it out, they sent it in, and they said, North American is going to give Resource One a lien on this car.
Oh, so by doing that, that actually created a security lien. I mean, they created the security lien.
North American
okay, created. So all the last 10 minutes of questions about Clayton are irrelevant.
I believe so.
Okay, so we've got a car dealer that created a security interest, and from your perspective, sold the car in the ordinary course of business out of inventory.
Correct.
Which triggers 328.
Correct.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We have so many questions.
I welcome them.
And is there a dispute? This was a summary judgment.
Yes.
And is there a genuine issue regarding whether or not the car was inventory?
Based on the facts that you have before you, which we stipulated to, I don't believe there's any issue of that. We cited you to an Alabama Supreme Court case because there was none in Texas or in Colorado. There's an Alabama Supreme Court case, it's like Enrage General Motors Acceptance Corporation, who happens to have been a client of mine for 30 plus years. It says, once a car gets on the lot, it's inventory. No matter what you call it, it's inventory. That is the case here. We also cited you a Kansas case that dealing with some of these issues, and it says the same thing. It's, once that car hits the lot, that's where Mr. Schumacher saw it, a website for sale with lots of other cars. He goes down there. It's on a dealership lot. We've all been to car dealerships.
With other cars.
That's a fact. It's undisputed. The purpose of 9328, and we've cited you some treatises and things of that nature, is to protect the unwitting buyer. And a decision where a lender and a buyer are both taken advantage of, you rule in favor of the buyer because the buyer's not in a position to know. If you go in and buy a car, you're going to be at the same risk. If you go into Dealing Dog and you buy a car, you don't know if that lien has been released in any way, it's inventory financing or it's just a general security agreement that says we have all your tangible and intangible personal property.
I have one more question before,
okay.
And we're running out of time.
Yes.
But, Does Mr. Cleeton's intent at the time the security interest was created, intent to use it as personal, for personal use, family use, household use, does that have any significance?
I don't believe it does, and we don't know what that intent is. There's nothing in the record.
Well, there's one affidavit from a Mr. Rourke. An affidavit from Mr. Rourke said that Mr. Cleeton used the vehicle for his personal use, personal household.
I don't think it has any bearing because it's owned by a company, and that's the primary use. If you look at the code and the sections, it talks about primary, primarily used for. So what's the primary use? The primary use is it's owned by a dealership, it's owned by a corporation. The primary use is it's an asset of the corporation, not a personal vehicle of somebody else. So that's, I guess I'm out of time.
You're out of time. We do appreciate your patience in answering our many questions.
And, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. James Nottingham on behalf of Resource One Credit Union, registration number 33230. Your Honors, this case revolves around the central issue of whether subsection A or subsection B of section 9320 of the Texas Uniform Commercial Code applies. We talked a little bit about those, but I'd like to dive in a little bit more.
Mr. Lamb concedes that they're not making any claim at all under subsection B. So you're saying this decision depends on whether A applies or B applies, but they're not making any claim under B.
But if they're not making a claim under B, their briefing addressed B, and I'm happy to address B, but I think the result is the same whether you look at subsection A or subsection B.
Well, why don't you help us by starting with A?
With that, sure. Mm-hmm. So subsection A, in order to prevail under subsection A and to take free and clear of a lien, two things have to occur. The buyer has to buy in the ordinary course of business, and the security interest must have been created by the buyer's seller. Let's first take the buyer in the ordinary course. Buyer in the ordinary course is a term that it has generated a lot of attention from cases. But if you look specifically to comment 3 of section 9320, it says that a buyer in the ordinary course applies primarily to inventory. Additionally, there's two Texas cases, In Re Wind Stores, which is a Texas bankruptcy decision, that actually uses the word requiring. It says that by requiring that the buyer buy from inventory, it establishes that the buyer is buying in the ordinary course.
Okay, well, is there a factual dispute here over whether Mr. Schumacher bought from inventory?
I don't think it's a factual dispute, Your Honor. I think it's actually a legal issue, and I'll tell you why. I think you look to the way that the security interest in the good was perfected. There's two ways that you can perfect a security interest under Texas law. If it's an inventory transaction, you must. And the word must comes from both a comment to section 311 and the Opaco case. You must perfect using a UCC financing
statement. Who makes that decision? The lender, right?
On how to perfect the security interest?
Yeah, whether to file it with the financing statement and put on the title is a decision that the lender made, right?
I think typically that's true.
That's what happened here, right?
Well, this case is a bit unique. In this case, the title application was actually filed by Mr. Cleet. I think typically a lender is the one who files the title application.
Well, let me try to recast, if I could, Judge Richmond's question. Mr. Schumacher would have no way of knowing whether North American and or Resource One had chosen to perfect with the financing statement or by recording on the title, correct?
That's true.
So isn't
well, I don't know if that's true. Sorry to interrupt. Certainly, I bought a number of used cars in my day, and whenever I buy a used car, I want to see the title to the vehicle. The title of the vehicle in this case was certainly a certificate of title. It was in UCC financing.
Is there any indication that Mr. Schumacher saw the title before the money was paid?
I don't believe he did, but it would be my position that he certainly should have wanted to see that title.
Okay. Isn't the purpose of 320A to protect, as opposing counsel suggested, to protect, you know, the buyer from inventory, from having to do just what you suggested? I won't buy this unless you show me the title.
I don't think that's correct at all, Your Honor.
Okay, what's the purpose of 320A?
But I think the purpose of 320A and really the purpose of security interest generally is to protect the lien holder. I think when you look at the idea of recording a lien on a vehicle or any property, it's to give the world notice that that property is encumbered.
How does 320A, which would seem to limit the lien holder's rights, protect the lien holder?
I'm not sure that it does. I don't think that I follow that it limits the lien holder's rights. I think it gives...
It creates a factual circumstance in which a buyer can end up with title free of the lien.
I think that's true. But I think, again, there's certain elements that the buyer has to meet in order to meet that burden where they do take free of the lien.
Okay, and I apologize if I'm seeing fault. Specifically, which elements did the buyer fail to meet here by virtue of stipulated or undisputed facts?
I believe that the buyer did not buy from inventory and therefore cannot satisfy the ordinary course of business test.
Okay, and your basis for saying no inventory is the way the security interest was prevailing?
Correct.
Okay. What other elements can't the buyer need to prevail under 320?
Well, this Section A clearly states that the buyer may only take free of the security interest if that security interest is created by the buyer's seller. Here we had Mr. Cleeton is clearly the one creating the security interest. Mr. Cleeton signs the loan documents. The dealer's name is nowhere on the promissory note. So Mr. Cleeton, in his individual capacity, is the one creating that security interest.
How can he create a security interest if he doesn't have title to the property?
I think if you look at Section 203, which is the creation of the security interest provision, it states that in order to grant a security interest, you have to have rights in the collateral. And I think what you have here is Mr. Cleeton was the president, the registry agent, the salesperson for, he really was the face and he was the organization. So clearly, at being an officer of the corporation, he had the power and authority to transfer and grant security interest in this property.
But wasn't that what happened? That's what happened. And then North American sold the car to Mr. Shoemaker.
Or Fitness.
To Fitness. Sold it to Fitness. So Fitness did buy from a seller who created the security interest.
No, it'd be my position that Mr. Cleeton created the security interest.
Okay, with respect, you seem to be trying to have that both ways.
Right.
I apologize for that.
Sorry.
Okay, if Cleeton doesn't have any rights in the property, he can't create a security interest. If he has rights in the property by virtue of it being a one-person corporation, which he's the president and the head salesperson, then North American created the security interest. How can you have that both ways?
But it's, again, I can't speak to whether Texas should have granted the security interest, but I think the fact remains that Texas did grant the security interest. And I think Cleeton, when you look at the note, clearly was the only person on that note.
I thought in response to one of Judge Richmond's questions, it was indicated that, you know, a document was sent by North American to the Registrar of Titles in Texas that said that granted the Resource One security interest.
Okay.
Is that not correct?
I thought that's what Exhibit 5 said.
Are you talking about the title application?
Yes. Yes.
Was sent by Mr. Cleeton?
The applicant is listed as North American. The registrant's name is listed as North American. It is signed by Mr. Cleeton.
I believe that's correct.
So isn't that indicia that North American created the security interest?
You know, again, I guess it does cut both ways. I mean, I think you have Mr. Cleeton signing that in his individual capacity. There's no reference, I believe, on the signature line to North American.
But Mr. Cleeton isn't individually a party to that title.
He's not a party to...
The title documents?
No.
Okay. And he is for, in terms of the resource, one note and apparently incorporated security agreement. Mr. Clayton is only an individual.
Correct, Your Honor.
There's no indication in any of the documentation at that level that he was acting on behalf of North America.
Correct. And, okay. And that's from the credit union's vantage point. They were making a loan to a consumer. Clearly, when there's an inventory financing, it's a completely different transaction. You know, you have the UCC perfecting the security interest. You're typically dealing with multiple vehicles. You're dealing with a dealer. This was a run-of-the-mill consumer loan. Mr. Clayton came in, signed the same paperwork that any other consumer at the credit union would sign. So the credit union, from their vantage point, is really not in a position where they had any reason to believe that this vehicle was going to be resold. And so when it was resold, the credit union took immediate steps to try and enforce that security interest by first trying to repossess and then ultimately by filing the report.
Okay, let's try it this way. Okay, so from the credit union's perspective, it's just helping a guy buy a car, right?
Correct.
Okay. From Mr. Shoemaker's perspective, he goes to a car dealership, sees one car of many on the lot, he likes it, he negotiates a sale. Who loses? Is the credit union's misperception or Mr. Schumacher's misperception? And why?
I would argue that Mr. Schumacher loses.
Why?
I point specifically to a case from this court, the Guy Martin case, talk about the purpose of the recording statute. The purpose of the recording statute is ultimately to give notice. It's to give notice to buyers. It's to present a way for buyers to learn of liens, to know if a property is encumbered. I think the theory that the appellant is arguing, by virtue of taking any encumbered property onto a dealer's property and then selling it, you strip the lien. And to me, that's crazy. It all flies in the face of commerce. I think if you have liens and you're going to enforce liens and protect liens, mm-hmm. there has to be a way to do it. And simply by putting it on a dealer's lot can't be enough to just strip a lien from a lender.
However, doesn't 320A, subsection A, say that Fitness or Mr. Shoemaker would take free of the lien even if they knew the lien was there, even if they knew the lien had been perfected by Resource One?
I think that's true, Your Honor. I would go back to, I think there's two elements that they can't satisfy with A, the ordinary course and being created by the buyer seller. But, you know, again, I think that the statute gives you subsection A and subsection B. It's certainly our position that subsection B is the applicable section here. I think when you look at B, it looks at whether or not the good was purchased by a buyer who used it primarily for personal or household purposes. And I think when you look at the use that Mr. Clayton was putting this vehicle to, given the disclosures in the note, the title of the note, it was clearly a consumer transaction. It's our position that B, out of the two sections, is the more applicable section, but I think you reach the same result under either one.
Here's what I don't understand about that. It seems to me that both A and B are methods whereby a purchaser can defeat a security interest. You agree?
Or you could say it the other way, that a lender can enforce a security interest.
Is there any language in 320B that says if the buyer loses, the lender wins? Or if the buyer loses on B, doesn't that just open up the question of A? Because what I hear you saying is, if Mr. Shoemaker loses under B, Resource One wins. My interpretation would be, Mr. Shoemaker can win under A, he can win under B, and if he doesn't win under either, then Resource One wins. So I guess I don't understand where 320B gets
you. No, I think that's completely accurate, Your Honor. I think either section potentially provides relief to a buyer.
Okay, so the fact that he loses under 320B has no operative significance in this case. we decided under 328.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I was being thorough in addressing both A and B, because the both of them have been raised in the briefing, and I think the result is the same.
In that regard, let me ask you this then. Since this was a summary judgment, what is there in the record that creates a genuine issue of material fact regarding whether this vehicle was inventory?
I don't think I don't think it's a factual distinction, Your Honor. I think the facts are clear. I think the idea of whether or not something inventory, at least in our view, you have to look at the method of perfection, which I think goes back to a legal issue.
What case supports that proposition that you look at how the lender records its interest to determine whether or not the vehicle or the item is inventory? What case supports that position?
I believe it's the Apeco Corporation case, which is a Texas appellate decision. And I actually have the holding here. It says if a vehicle is part of inventory, the security interest, and they use the word must be filed with the Secretary of State. In all other cases, the security interest must be noted on the certificate.
But is that a case where there's a buyer claiming to be a buyer in the ordinary course, or is that a dispute about whether the security interest was properly recorded?
I believe it was.
I'll have to read it. I'm sorry, I don't want to
control it. I believe it was. I believe the manufacturer in that case, it was dealt with a mobile home, sold a mobile home to a dealer, and the dealer then sold to an innocent purchaser who didn't have knowledge of the lien. The dealer ended up not paying the manufacturer for the mobile home, and ultimately the court ruled that the vehicle was part of inventory and that they took free and clear of the lien.
Which is Mr. Schumacher's position here.
Or actually, that they did have misspoke, but they did not take free and clear of the lien.
All right. Okay.
I believe that's the holding.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
We appreciate your argument as well, and we appreciate your patience in responding to the many questions. I think you exhausted your argument time, I believe.
I exhausted my time. Okay.
All right, on that basis, so we're all exhausted, and counsel are excused in this case. We will issue a written opinion in due course.